Pô, tá bom.
Ela bota a tomada, a pulsação de 40, antes da lá o deformando bastante, não consiste em dar uma segunda tomada.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good morning, everyone. I'm Ellen Lai. I'm also a member of the committee.
Good morning. I'm also a member of this committee, Janita Thomas-Lowden.
Morning, I'm Peter Smith-Fane.
Morning, Chair and everybody. I am Vincent Lazen, member of this committee. Thank you.
The new members and the arrived members.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, everybody. I'm Sana Plaisi, member of the Public Committee.
The nutrition of the station is here, TJ.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks to the honorable members. I'm Bill Joachim, the Director General in the Department. I am accompanied by a number of DDGs.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Tulani Mavuso. I am the CEO in the department.
Good morning, honorable chair and honorable members. My name is Thomas Opterheider. I'm deputy director general for human capital and knowledge systems.
Good morning, chair and honorable members. My name is Dalman Sami. I'm responsible for
Morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I'm Boneni Moafe, representing the Acting DDG for International Cooperation and Resources.
Good morning. I'm Godfrey Mashamba, representing the Acting DDG Socio-Economic Partnership.
Let's start from the side, from the back. Let's know who are here at the back.
Good morning, Chairperson and members. My name is Leander Franz, the Parliament of Lighting Officer in the Ministry of Science and Technology.
Good morning, honorable members. I'm Mr. Atombo from Science and Technology.
Technology. Why don't you know? Because we don't want you to come probably to jot us down and report us to the president. Monitoring and evaluation. Okay.
Good morning, honorable chair, honorable members. My name is David Makwana. I'm also from the department. I'm responsible for policy analysis, strategy and planning, corporate governance, and monetary evaluation.
Good morning, Chair, honorable members, honored guests. I'm Aziza Frederick from the CSIR Parliamentary Office.
Good morning, honorable chair and honorable members. My name is Adrian DeLollo, and I'm also from the CSIR Parliamentary Liaison Office.
Well, so there are two now.
I'm new.
Oh, yeah, that's why I'm saying that now you are two of you.
Now we have two.
There's been only one all along. It means the CSIR is expanding. Yeah. That's good.
Good morning, all. I'm Michelle O'Connor from Media 24.
Good morning. I'm Vivita Mazula from CNN Space Investment.
Good morning. I'm Sivovina Mazanz from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group, PMG. Thank you.
Thank you very much. DG, you can lead us.
Thank you very much, Chair and Honourable Members. We have a presentation where we'd like to share with you some progress reports on our first quarter for this year, 2012-2013. The first part of the presentation reminds us what the vision, mission, and goals of the department is. With your permission, Chair, we will go through this very quickly. And then,
may I at least introduce to this house the success of the Women's Award, Women's Award event last Friday. It was quite a wonderful occasion which I happened to also have attended. Very, very impressive. Thank you.
Then the performance of the department, we have selected not all of the targets because we are finalizing a report which we will table formally to National Treasury on Friday, and we will make the copy available to the committee. So on the vision and mission, again, we hope to create a prosperous society that derives enduring and equitable benefits from science and technology. We do that by developing, coordinating, and managing a national system of innovation that hopefully will bring about maximum human capital, sustainable economic growth, and improved quality of life for all. So our goals as a department is to ensure then that we have this innovation capacity of this national system of innovation. We would like to enhance South Africa's knowledge generation capacity. And the recent numbers begin to show that we are doing the right things, because some emphasis in the number of publications coming out. Develop appropriate science, technology, and innovation human capital needs of the society. We'd like to ensure that there is world-class science, technology, and innovation infrastructure for the scientists to do their work. And then we would like to position South Africa as a strategic international research, development, and innovation partner. Again, the committee notes the five programs of the DST, the corporate services, the research, development, and innovation, which we call Program 2, international cooperation and resources, Program 3, human capital and knowledge system, Program 4, and socio-economic partnerships, Program 5. We tabled the strategy plan to the committee, and we just want to quickly remind ourselves the themes of the strategy plan under which we are reporting this first quarter report. The white paper, the NRDS, and the Turner Innovation Plan are all aimed at assisting the country to modernize the economy through the use of science, technology, and innovation. So that's our policy mix. So in order to achieve this modernization of the economy, we believe that the DST needs to enhance the capacity of the institutions, ensure adequate infrastructure is in place, and provide skilled science, engineering, and technology human capital to generate expert knowledge. So over the next 3 years, we as a department hope to continue to focus on research and development activity, to use the instruments to enhance human capital development, and continue to identify resources that will help in the knowledge infrastructure that is needed to do this. We do remember and recognize that science technology activity is an enterprise that is international, and therefore we need to be continuously looking at developing and identifying partners all over the world and within the rest of the continent. We have talked about this national system of innovation because we think it's still an important concept for the country to drive all of the activities that we are talking about. So maybe just quickly, this national system of innovation can be thought of as a set of functioning institutions, organizations, and policies which interact in a constructive way in the pursuit of a common set of social and economic goals and objectives. It's an organizing framework for the activities of government and relevant institutions.
We do acknowledge that this NSI is under development and is not fully in place. However, we believe that some important building blocks have been put in place and they need to be enhanced further. So what I'd like to do then is to start with Program 2 and give some highlights of the activities of Program 2, whose aim is really to facilitate the generation of knowledge and exploitation through research development in key parts of space science, bioeconomy, and energy to mention. So I think, Chair, if I am not mistaken, the department might have visited this committee since the announcement of a successful bid for the SKA. So the first of these, this was announced in May. So it's in this period, and we are happy to announce them that we have been awarded the opportunity to host the majority of this great humanitarian array in Africa, so we have achieved that. The House will also know that because of that announcement, 190 dishes of the SKA for phase one will be built in Carnarvon in the Northern Cape by 2015-2016, which means that the design for the 64 meerkat dishes that we have been doing needs to be aligned with the SKA phase one mission. That process has started. We have issued a request for proposal and then the tender for 64 dishes, but we are currently working with the SKA project office to ensure that the design of the 64 dishes that we are going to be putting in the Northern Cape are aligned to the 190 dishes that we will receive for the SKA phase one. So we think we are on course on that. Of course, in that process, we hope to create a number of construction jobs in the Northern Cape. We are happy to report that to date, 142 expanded public works program construction jobs have been created in the Northern Cape as we prepare the site for the construction of the 64 dishes.
Just a clarification, the 190 dishes from SKA, are they supplementary to the 7, or is it is 190 altogether including the 7? What is
Yes, it's over and above. So 64 dishes are the dishes that we had already committed as South Africa for the meerkat. So winning the bid means that for phase one of the SKA, we would get 190 over and above 64. So we would get 250 odd dishes then for phase one. Last year, if I'm not mistaken, the minister had an engagement with the Da Vinci Institute and requested them, as part of the partnership they had with Technology of 100 companies, to place interns in their company. We are happy to report, Chair, that with some funding that we received from the Treasury, and in partnership with the Da Vinci Institute, we've been able to have approximately 50 interns that have been placed in this company. And we've been informed, the minister got an update from the company that, correct me if I'm wrong, that 80% of these interns who were placed in these companies have agreed that they will probably employ them beyond the internship program of 1 year. So this is a program that seems to be working very, very well, and then we'll continue to request for additional funding to ensure that our young people who are unemployed can be placed as interns in these companies and others, of course. The next target of five new technology-based enterprises supported through the Technology Innovation Agency by the 31st of this financial year, we didn't have a first quarter target, but we're happy to report that one technology-based company called Propagon was established. If you remember, this is a company that is going to commercialize the gel that is currently being researched
at the University of KwaZulu-Natal that is meant to reduce the number of HIV infections to women who are HIV positive. So we're very, very happy with this development. And then on the International Cooperation and Resources Program, the aim is to develop, promote, and manage international relationships, opportunities, funds, and technology agreements that strengthen our national security. So on the amount of money that we would like to leverage from foreign SDI funds, we have set a target of about 240 million, and then we had a first quarter target of 20 million, and we $15 million, that we have received. This is an area where we will keep looking and probing, but what we have heard from the EU, where we get the majority of the funds, is that a number of our projects are likely to be funded. So it's a moderate risk, but we think we'll be able to meet this target because we've always met the target. Only 46 million where South African and foreign funds are spent on science, technology-based socio-economic development in the continent. We've already has, spent 5 million on science and technology-based socio-economic development. So these are the projects where we put some funding, and then we get some funding with our partners in the rest of the continent. We've been successful with a number of countries that we've worked with, so we also think that we should not have a problem in getting the funds. The next subject is 150 South African students that are participating in international science, technology, and innovation cooperation research projects. The first quarter target was 130 of these students that are participating by June, and we're happy to say that a total of 123 of these students participated in a number of these cooperation research projects in Argentina, India, Japan, and Angola. And then the next target is 800 foreign participants that are participating in South Africa's Global Knowledge and SDI Network. It's got a target of 255. And this is a high-risk area where we've been able to have a total of 42 foreign participants in Global Knowledge and SDI, and we have to work even harder on that side. And then the third program is to provide leadership education of an innovative and competitive society with highly skilled human capital, cutting-edge knowledge and research One of the challenges that we have in our national system of innovation is the number of people who are meant to do research. We are on the process of finalizing a human capital strategy for research, innovation, and scholarship. We, I think, have almost finished the document, and it will be signed off by the minister in the next couple of months. And the minister is intending to present and ask people to comment on this document with a view to then moderate, sorry, to then start the implementation of what is in the document. We already are implementing a number of things that are in that document in any case, such as increasing the number of research chairs, continue to roll out the Center of Excellence. We know we are rolling out 6 more, and continue to support women and postgraduate students, especially black postgraduate students. So it will really help us as a framework within which we can probably coordinate our activities a little bit more. The next target is 6,100 of postgraduate research students that will be supported by 31st of March. And the department has received an annual report from the NRF, and it does look like we are doing well. About 55% of the annual target were already funded by DST by June this year, and the breakdown of the honors, masters, and doctoral students that are supported is indicated in the presentation. And then we have a target of the number of people that participate in science awareness and engagement program by 31st of March 2013. As you would know, we already have 85 organizations that were awarded grants to conduct National Science Week activities, and we had a successful launch and the whole week. The launch was at the University of Johannesburg, and the whole week of activities. What we do with these activities is that we then try and do a survey and collect the data of how many people actually participated in these activities. So we're not able to do this at this point in time, but we are busy collecting the data. So hopefully for the second quarter report, we'll give the honorable members through the chair a sense of how many people participated. But we'd expect the number to be a bit better than last year. 2,600 research that are supported through NRF managed programs. The first quarter target was 1,300 of these researchers. We've already achieved this target, exceeded. 10 MSc and PhD research students in the IKS projects. We've exceeded that target. We already have 19 students. The next target of 10 postgraduate students that have graduated. This is on course. We do know that there are about 10 of these postgraduate students that are registered by 2012. Number of interns that are postgraduate supported interns in the work environment, again, rather than 550, we have 520 students. In the area of photonics projects, we have secured part of the identified and funded by 30 October. The call has been issued, and we do not worry about the fact that we will not be able to have this issue responded to by the institution, so we're fine. The number of publications and prototypes resulting from research and innovation activities from the Innovation Center, we have looked at their business plans. We do hope that these publications will be generated. So maybe we can begin to do this committee a sense of how that is progressing. But this is not a target that you can break into quarters very, very easily. We will just keep coming and give you an update on this. On the Indigenous Knowledge System, we had set up a target of having a cabinet memorandum on the legislation on the protection of the Indigenous Knowledge System. The target was to have this approved by the Minister by the 31st of May, and then we have received recommendations and input that have been integrated into the latest version of the legislation that has been submitted to our leader. So we hope that we'll be able to meet this. However, we hope to work very, very closely with the Department of Trade and Industry, because we're in the process of amending the bill on the IP-related activity on IKS. We hope that is not going to delay. On the production processes for two candidate products that are piloted out of the IKS, we are happy to report that the agribusiness proposal of candidate products for two cosmeceutical products is being developed by the Technology Innovation Agency. We hope it will meet their funding requirements and will be able to get this cosmeceutical product being turned into a business activity. Now, we set out a target of having 15 leads identified for product development by 2015. Just a little bit of background. We know that we are funding centers that are looking at identifying products out of plants, medicinal plants, that are identified to have a number of activities. So what usually happens is that the Indigenous Knowledge centers identify leads out of these medicinal plants, and they do research and they take them into a drug development program. So that's what we mean by leads. So we're hoping to prioritize about 15 of these leads and we are happy to report that 7 new leads have been identified for product development. Out of these 7, 4 leads for traditional medicine, 1 lead for oral care, 1 lead for acne treatment, and 1 for nutraceutical, I think, something that relates to things that have a nutritional value. 3 ITS are patents locally registered, and we've already have 5 of these patents identified for filing purposes, and 3 provisional patents have been identified as the investor future. Again, we will come back to the committee and give you progress on these patents that are being filed. And then the last program is program 5, where we would like to announce growth and development priorities of government through targeted science and technology interventions and development of strategic partnerships with other government departments, industry, and research institutions of communication. We were hoping to have the annual target of 373 master's and PhD students that are funded in this program through a number of initiatives that this program is advancing. And we're hoping to have a target of 280 of these master's students, and we are happy to say 424 master's and PhD students are funded and co-funded by the 30th of June 2012. 50 funded and co-funded internships. We already have 50 of these that were awarded by the 31st of June. On the peer-reviewed scientific publications, 57 of them report a target of 5. We are happy to say that this target has been achieved. 15 of these have been published by June. On the number of patents, 15 of these are patents for the prototypes. We have already 8 of these patents prototypes that are on course for being added into the intellectual property. We have a technology assistance program where we assist small, medium enterprises with technology for them to access the competitive supplier development program that is offered by the state-owned enterprises. We were supposed to have approximately 25 of these companies receiving. We have 13 of them that have been at this point in time funded. We hope to add another 23 companies very, very soon. On the number of medium enterprises that are receiving technology support, we are on course, even though we haven't met 482, we have 477 of the small medium enterprises that are supported. This is through the Technology Creation Program that is run by the Technology Innovation Agency. And then we hope to have 5 policy briefs on innovation system and innovation policy. We are constantly, at the moment, we're running the fieldwork for the research and development survey that is to be completed, and we are busy collecting data on government departments. You need to watch this one very, very carefully. And then the next slide tries to give the portfolio committee a sense of how we're doing on the finances. So on the first 2 columns give you a sense of the planned expenditure at the end of June 2012. And then the next 2 middle are trying to give you a sense of the actual expenditure. And even though the programs have spent variedly in terms of meeting at least 25% of their funds being spent, but on the overall you can see that we've spent 25% of the budget that we received voted by this committee. We were hoping to have spent about 34% of the funding, and we are trying to address this problem, especially for those programs that have underspent so far. And the graph below just again tries to depict this graphically, where the blue curve is meant to be the cash flow projection according to the planning, and the red actually shows the actual expenditure. As you can continue to be guided by the medium-term strategic framework of government, the National Research and Development Strategy and the 10-year innovation plan for our work. And we are of the opinion that the majority of our annual performance plan indicators are of course by the end of the financial year, but we will keep monitoring those that seem to be outside of the range. Human capital development, knowledge generation, and exploration, and Africa collaboration remain a key focus of the work that we do in the department. And we are strengthening our monitoring and evaluation system within the department and within the system. Thank you, Chairperson, Honorable Members. And we have agreed with the DDG that today I will do the presentation and they will answer all the questions.
Well, I don't look that ready. Okay. Right. I'll allow members then to ventilate their
suffocation.
I'll start with the Honorable Wipia, the Honorable Smith, the Honorable Chaprovan, the Honorable Flati, and the Fox.
More people who come and make presentations, I mean,
And fact, alien on that point. Very interesting that I now know that there are so many capable women. What we saw in last Friday amazed everybody, including the DJ. I was even sitting next to him. I'm surprised that he didn't have the conscience for not coming here today. Thank you very much.
I would defend the Disney by saying maybe the structure in the new, in the, when you look into the structure again, when you'll be looking into the, even the post that you advertise as a comedy producer, I do think that it's quite what it keeps on reminding us that in fact science has always been perceived that it is a domain of men, and as this comedy we want to ensure that struggle we wage and we win. Having said that, Chair, just a couple of questions. On slide that talks about research development and innovation program, which is talking about CPWP, well, let's commend the department for ensuring that it is that those in construction, but for me, the quality of the results is those that are enabling to push for a higher school that are doing for short and long term when they leave the site of work. Will they then be able to move on and be empowered for that process? The second one is why are you saying on the international cooperation on the research program that on the status high risk can empower me? Why is it high risk? We had an international, maybe it's not for this time, Chair, but I think it's important for you to be courageous because that has been my observation. When you talk about the we had an international oversight where we were great. We have some questions. That is why I'm raising the issue of getting the document given us time, because we have very interesting questions. With some of the reasons that the department that has been observing, some of those briefings, they say, what we have been briefed by entities or by the department, what we then got from our fortunately from a person who organized the briefing for us, Mr. Dan, we could identify a gap that there is quite a huge gap of what you were briefed and what you are briefing us. Yes. Maybe not for now. When again we have to go through that chair, I want to request that when we go through all our documents, we are then able to identify some of this area. So I thought I must just comment on that. The organization on the slide, Human Capital and Knowledge System Program, you said there are 85 organizations awarded grants. Is it possible to get a breakdown of those organizations? I'm raising that because we will always be vigilant in coming to who are the people in these organizations. I'm hoping that our people are not being injured, are not being used as far as the experience that we have in some of these areas. Not here, but that is why the question was to say the breakdown of those organizations. I don't know, can you, there's a name here that is what is that? I don't know if you, whether it was a clip of your time or what you said there. On the Socioeconomic Partnership Program 1, the Department of Investment Research, when you said communication is already in the document, you say
community.
So I just wanted to check if I was not clear. The last one, how are these, which is on Socioeconomic Partnership Program 4,
My interest is the how are they identified? Whose responsibility is it? Public enterprise? I would assume maybe it's public enterprise. I don't want to assume, but how are they being identified and the criteria that they're being used in identifying those? I thought for me those would be the more the questions that I have an interest on them being answered. Thank you.
Commercial risk in terms of competing products and so on. I mean, we had a problem with Juul,
for similar reasons, I would think, perhaps. And I'd like to be fairly sure that if we're investing public monies in a commercialization process, the outcome is likely to be successful. On slide, this one's got no number, but that one was 13, 14, 15, no, 16. You speak about the international cooperation here and the high risk thing, you know, the 800 foreign participants in our global knowledge and SDI network. I presume, is this the reason why at the final slide you say you're placing far more emphasis on Africa? I'm not quite sure what that conclusion was derived from in the presentation, but I imagine there's a lot of scope here, particularly with SKA and so on. So maybe you could explain how you're addressing that high risk, what precisely you're doing to minimize the risk. On slide, what is this one here? On the slide 18 on, we talk about human capacity at certain outputs. One of the, it's not in your slide here, but one of the outputs that's been referred, one of the issues that's been referred to in the past quite commonly is the aging cohort of retiring scientists and the demographics as well. Now, the demographics is being addressed, but the aging side isn't. Now, there are many institutions of higher learning where they impose a mandatory retirement age of 60. No matter how productive you are, goodbye at 60, go and find a new job or retire. That seems to be rather counterintuitive, given our desperate needs. Has this issue been addressed by yourselves in any way? Is it going to be addressed? Or if it hasn't, would you consider addressing it? On the slide where you get to the numbers run out, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, on the IK legislation, we did have a presentation from yourselves a short time ago where the issue of whether the government would consider introducing sui generis legislation or running with the existing product was still an option. The way this is phrased suggests that the sui generis approach has been accepted. I just want to get confirmation whether that's the case or not. And then if it has been, why on earth are DTI amending something which presumably is going to be replaced? I don't quite get that. And then the last thing, oh yes, and then the slide after that, you talk about 3 IKF patents being locally registered. Do you tell me, do you register internationally as well, or is this purely local? Because it would worry me if they simply get stolen elsewhere. And then just the final one, on the budget, not on the budget, on the spending to date, you mentioned the two programs which are quite significantly under, which is human capital and the socio-economic partnerships, and they're down by 37 and 29% respectively. Obviously, you did say you're intending addressing it, but how? I mean, you can't just throw money at something. You have to actually have money thrown at something that, you know, needs the money. Thanks.
Yes, the previous two speakers did cover this document to a great extent, so I will only focus on two things. On the, yes, all the slides aren't properly numbered, so that is a problem, please, in future. Slide 29, you refer to the planned expenditure being 34% as opposed to the actual expenditure of 25%. So there's a difference between 10%. Could you explain it, please? Well, you've done so, tried to do so, but then, as a result of that, I would like to ask a more general question. What, according to you, DG, are the critical areas that need immediate attention? Then on slide 11, regarding space sites, I need an honest, straight answer regarding subspace. What is happening there? We didn't meet the deadline of last year. The ARMC project, I'm aware of the fact that Sunspace is in great trouble. I'm going to visit Sunspace tomorrow. They are desperate. Their deadline for closing the door seems to be the 6th of September, am I correct? They've already lost half of the engineers. The majority of them work without proper salaries. Please, sir, give us a straight answer as to what's going on there. Then regarding the SKA, You've mentioned it in the previous, one of the previous honourable members also touched on it. 142, the number of 142 construction jobs. Now, in the build-up to the SKA, it was mentioned that it's only going to be a job generator. But this is not spectacular. You mentioned construction jobs. What other jobs will there be? Will there be maintenance jobs? What is the target regarding job creation and the SKA? And then we all expect during the middle of next month that the Minister of Minerals is going to lift the fracking ban. Has your department already had something, a plan in place regarding the effect that fracking is going to have on the SKA and the salt telescope? I think it's really important for our minister to take a stance on this. And is she going to use her powers according to the AGA Act in this regard? Because it's a build-up to a huge crisis. We know about the action group, the Trigger the Kulu Action Group, and they are absolutely mobilized to go ahead and go to court when the moratorium is lifted. I think there's more of this. Thank you all.
This is when I think my points were covered by the other members. Thank you, Honourable Sir. I only have one concern on the SKA. I've got a lot of concerns and queries from the community of Carnarvon, especially in terms of the SKA. My question will only be, what is this? Who is chairing the stakeholder forum? And what is it doing? Because it seems to me that the stakeholder forum is creating a lot of problems. I can't be specific now, but I think I will forward all that information to the DG. But can you just clarify that? Yes, thank you.
I think the ball is in our court. Oh, you said it's not in our court, it's in their court. That's here now. They are in there. Let them prove me wrong.
No, thanks. I'll maybe kickstart and pick up some questions, but I'll then hand over to the DDG. But again, thank you for the questions and thanks to you, Chair. We do apologize on the documents. We'll try our level best to meet the 14-day deadline. My colleague here was trying to convince me that the schedule for the site comes later, but we should leave that to the portfolio committee, but let's try and meet the portfolio. The women issue, we apologize that today our CFO could not join us because she's ill, because she has to answer all the questions. And Ma'am Gwena, the DDG for Corporate Services, is attending, I think, an IT conference somewhere in Cape Town, so she couldn't join us. So sincere apologies. We have a target of 47% at senior management level to be women. At the moment, we're sitting around 43%. To meet the 5% gap, we would need approximately 12 women to be appointed from direct to chief director and DDG level. We're doing our level best to work on that target, so we could maybe at another point, maybe at the third quarter, just give you a sense of how that's going, but we'll try and do our level best.
I think it is important here to make a note there for it. We are almost close to 50-50, which is the national target. We are only, actually, the apology in that we are at that level because they are not here at the opportunity elsewhere, but they are making a difference.
Okay. I'll ask Val to talk to the nature of jobs in the construction and whether things are being transferred to future as not just the jobs during construction, so asking to do that. The reason why we say that on the ICR funding is a high risk, as you know, we get the bulk of our funding, especially on the foreign funding that comes from Europe in particular. And we all know about the economic crisis that's happening in that area. We have been informed, though, that even though there is a recession that's coming and looming, there is a chance that the Research and Development and Innovation Funding will not be affected. In fact, in the meeting I had with the DG for Research, he said that it's likely to, they are likely to have a situation where the funding will be increased for Research, Development and Innovation as part of the Horizon 2020. But we don't want to rest on our laurels. We have to continue to work at these foreign funds because things do not change overnight. So I think that's really what we are saying. On the number of organizations that were awarded the grants, I'll ask Thomas to talk to that. I'm not sure whether we have that available today, but we'll be happy through you, Chair, to make that available on the various organizations that work with us in various provinces, because as you remember, the National Science Week happens everywhere, and then we have partners that we work with that will give you a breakdown, including the expertise of the people who participate. Photonics, Dr. Varmun Sami says he's the Leonard one here, so he'll be able to provide some explanation. But generally, you would know that these days, people use light for communication and to transport high-speed data because it's using the speed of light. So there are a number of programs, including the use of lasers, which is also included in the photonics and the applications that they probably have visited with data are. But in the area of use of light in communication and other applications, this whole area would be photonics. For instance, people are now using light for the treatment of cancers in combination with other drugs. That would be part of just the program called photonics. But as I say, we have the learned one who looks younger and is going to remind us of this chair for the rest of the week. On the socio-economic partnerships, I don't know about whether I want to talk about the technology stations program. It's essentially a tier-funded program where we have a number of technology stations that are attached at the universities of technology. So they will then have programs. I think each one of these technology stations focus in certain areas. I do know, for instance, that at the Valley University of Technology and Central University, they help small medium enterprises with the technologies in the advanced manufacturing area. So they would know the, they would of course advertise the offerings that the station offers to the small medium enterprises, and the small medium enterprises would then come to the technology station. But Val could add the details. Honorable Smith, the gap in the national system of innovation. We think that the biggest challenge is the coordination at governance level. We are worried that you have a number of initiatives that are happening within government and in the private sector and sometimes the science council, but then they never have a locus of coordination. For instance, on the funding, we do know that the Department of Trade and Industry provide funding for industry, support program for industrial innovation and the trade program. But I don't think we as the Department of Science and Technology have an oversight on the success of those programs. And therefore, you may be having programs that are successful, but we don't know. In fact, in the last 2 weeks, we had a dinner with business where they indicated that what they need from the Department of Science and Technology is funding for what they call process and product innovation. Now, that funding is available from another government department, but they were not aware of this thing, so that's one example. The other one is we do know, for instance, that the National Research Foundation receives funding from the Department of Labor from something called Cascade. And there are a number of other government departments that are funding. So this is a general problem. But also generally, the coordination at the highest level is still a gap. because we believe that the decisions can then be made centrally, which will help understanding where everybody is going. Those threads for me are the two important ones, and the Ministerial Review Committee has also helped us by identifying some of these challenges and what can be put in place to address some of those. I'm not so sure what is the process for the outcomes of that report to be presented to this committee. Maybe I'll put some comment about that. And then the second area where we think in the National System of Innovation we need to pay attention. We have a number of projects and pilots that we're thinking. But I think we are battling to get these things to be adopted by a number of natural end users who are supposed to increase these programs to the level that would make the impact that we all would desire. Just to give two examples, you would know as this committee that we have piloted in a place called Claymont, I think, the construction of houses using a different building material and technology. And we believe this is a successful program. But for this project and this program and this initiative to be adopted by the Department of Human Settlement is something that tends to be slightly beyond our control. Again, coordination in the implementation and in the upscaling. We have a number of other initiatives, such as on the Glen Bay, aquaculture initiatives, medicinal plant activities that need to be upscaled. But we don't know. We are trying to think about how do we influence the decision makers to have an uptake of these initiatives so that they can then be implemented. So that's, in my view, perhaps the second set of challenges. The third one, and perhaps the last one as an example, but here we have to wait. We do know that our ability to patent still requires attention. We still have, if you just look at the numbers, I'm sure NECI will be coming to share with you their latest advanced technology and innovation indicator. They still remain flat. But what we have decided to do is to speak to, in fact, yesterday I had a conversation with the National Intellectual Property Management Office. And they said they will be able to give us in the next couple of months a sense of the invention disclosures that are already happening in the universities and whether these are interesting, because the invention disclosures is a starting point of beginning to start to file, and then how these patents that have been filed are going to be granted, and then we'll be able to do a tracking over the number of years. What we have experienced is that whenever we start initiatives, it takes about 3 or 4 or 5 years before you can see, you know, whether they are making the dent that you'd like them to do. So we'll be able to, I think we just have to wait as far as this is concerned. For those of you who read the business day yesterday, I was humbled by the article that I read on the two acts that have been passed by government that lawyers think are very progressive. The other one is the Biodiversity Act and the management of our biodiversity. And the other one that was mentioned was the IPR Act for publicly financed research. So we hope that it will begin to have the desired impact. The amount of funding, of course, to initiate the commercialization still remains a challenge. But I think we've got the right instruments. We just have to allow them to take this course. The issue of 64 dishes and the tender specification for the SKA and the fact that Dan is saying the actual building of a project of this nature requires something which is called agreeing on a final design. Now, as you know, that the telescope is made up of three components. It's made up of the dishes, the dish array. It's made up of the sparsely populated array, the one that we see in Australia, and the densely populated array. This is there. Nobody really knows which of these specifications are the ones that would really work for the SKA. So they are drawing on the demonstrators, the one in Australia, the ASCAP, as well as the CAT7 and the MEERKAT. So what we have done is we have designed the MEERKAT dishes but it has got to be adopted. We are of the opinion that the design is almost what would be called phase one. Okay, there might be a few changes that they will make, but we think it will be adopted. The tender that has been issued is the tender for the 64 dishes for the meerkat, not for the phase one.
So they have to speak to each other.
They have to speak to each other. And the project office was in Manchester, I think, 2 weeks ago, to really start the conversation of the alignment in the design and making sure that we also perhaps have a little bit of room, even though the tender has been issued, to modify slightly for the company that is going to manufacture the dishes. So hopefully we have the space to do that. I'll ask Val to talk about it.
That you may still have probably, okay, you must expect probably also some changes even beyond what you think, because when I went to Cambridge recently, the chair of the PAB is there in Cambridge, and they are developing a set of very advanced issues, which they say they are going to supersede all the issues that have existed ever since. And so they are actually, they told me that they are actually the initiators of the thinking. Professor Alexander was the one hosting me there at Cambridge. And so I went to see those designs, and they showed me they are superiority from all designs that have existed. And they are very simple and sort of kind of umbrella-like. So, and they said this, so you may expect that they may also say that whatever you had in mind is also still obsolete. Yeah. Okay. It's a very great one that is happening there. Yeah.
And so I'm not sure if Val has the details on the commercialization risk of the Tanaka culture, but I do know that we have agreed to fund the follow-on trial. You remember that the first trial indicated the 49% efficacy. So there's a follow-on trial to look at this. Because there's another study, I can't remember, that was done in Africa that seemed to... So I think that we are waiting the result of the follow-on trial. But if it's successful and it probably increased the efficacy, we still are of the opinion that the gel offers a slightly different mechanism for protection. I don't know if you've seen the statistics of the number of women who actually are infected by HIV/AIDS. And if I remember very well in the slides that Dr. Mtsalebi showed, is that it's in the ages between 16, 18, up to mid-20s, we have a huge number, and in fact the numbers keep going up. Now, the argument is that it's very difficult for young women in the power relation to be able to decide whether the request that is being made on them could have restrictions in the form of asking a maid to use a condom. And the tenofovir gel offers that kind of opportunity for women not to negotiate, because as you know, sex workers and these kinds of people and the young ones who are relying sometimes on funding from the older men, this is a challenge. So we think there is a unique opportunity and a unique market for tenofovir gel. But of course, I think we have to take cognizance of other developments elsewhere in the world. I'll ask Monene to talk about slide 15 on the foreign participants and putting emphasis on Africa. I think Monene knew either to the high risk, or are we mitigating the high risk by having increasing the rest of the continent partnership? Professor Afterheide is well vested to talk about the aging cohort, both in the retirement age, but some of the initiatives that we are putting in place in terms of focusing on emerging researchers as well as using research chairs to augment, I think, the cohort. He says he's also familiar with the IKS switch generic link to the TTI initiative as well as the patenting locally and international, so I'll ask him to do that. The way in which you address the low spending is rather simple, Honorable Smith. I tell the DDGs that they may lose their jobs. But on a serious note, what we do is we identify where the bottlenecks are, and then we really try in the next quarter to fast track on the basis of, I think, the cash flow projections. One of the things that I think we haven't perhaps got on top of is that sometimes before we release, as you say, the funding, we have to have the reports, both on the technical aspects of the project that we are presenting, but also on ensuring that in instances where money has been used, we do ask for audited financial statements. Sometimes that doesn't align very, very well. Sometimes university years and other institutions, but we try then to bring forward other spending. In fact, I think the July numbers, if I remember very well, already show that that's going to go up. Honorable Lopez Lawrence, as I've said, the difference between the 34 and 24 is that some of the programs they overspend, others they have underspent. And as I say, we do have an internal week or monthly interaction with the programs, and the DDG, Corporate Services, and the CFO, they then actually visit the programs, and then they ask them, where are you going to spend? Where is the money? That ought to be there. Where are the bottlenecks? And then they work with them to try and do that. So it's a tightly monitored process that takes into account the need to stick to your funding plan, but also, as Honorable Smith said, to make sure that the money is not being thrown without the proper analysis.
But that's 100%.
A month later, we caught it all up.
Yeah.
Oh, is this the latest? Okay,
yeah.
Perfect. Yes, perfect. On the ARMC project, we have received some funding from Treasury to the tune of approximately 120 million rand as the first tranche of the funding towards our contribution to the African Resource Management Constellation. We were promised that we are likely to get additional funding. The numbers that I think the colleagues have spread around for a full satellite is approximately 400 million rand and about just maybe under 500 million rand. So we've started to the process with our space agency for the development of the work packages, as well as then identifying companies that would work with us in developing that satellite. And SunSpace would be one of the beneficiaries of some of the work packages, but Val can give the details. So that's on that issue. On the issue of...
Excuse me, will you just embroider also on the fact that the equity share regarding SunSpace is very important?
I'm coming into that. The second issue relates to the equity issue. We have done all the work. We have presented the options to the minister, and the minister is tabling a cabinet memorandum about in the next week or so, or around the attainment of or government buying equity into SunSpace. We are engaging with them around. As I've said, these work packages that would help them perhaps in the next couple of months once we're finalizing the equity issue in the meantime. We are sensitive to the fact that some of the people have not been employed, but this process has took a little longer than we anticipated. And in fact, you're asking us to be brutally honest. One of the delays was a request that we had asked SunSpace to provide to us. And the request was, you are a private company. You ought to give us a business plan that shows projections of what share of the market you would acquire outside what government would be procuring for you. That process was a little delayed from their side, but we have subsequently received that, and therefore we are now able to include those projections into the finalization of the cabinet matter. 142 jobs, while we can speak to that. The fracking ban on Carnarvon, we had somebody in the, from the Department of Science and Technology and somebody from the SKA project office that was participating in the task team that is looking at fracking in the Karoo. What we are aware of is that the data that is available in terms of the potential gas that could be unlocked by the fracking will, some of the areas would be in the area where the Southern African Large Telescope is situated, and some of the areas would be where the dishes for the SKA would be located. So in the participation that we have in the task team, we have always reminded the task team, and in particular our colleagues from the Department of Mineral Resources, that insofar as the light pollution is concerned, which is the protection of the optical telescope, and insofar as the protection of the radio frequency interference is concerned, the AG Act remains the act that governs the protection of the environment in the vicinity where the telescopes are located. And my sense is that the recommendation that is currently being discussed would probably be mitigated by the minister simply where the radio frequency interference is affected and light pollution is generated that will impact the viewing by the Southern African Large Telescope should be in a position to use the Act to ensure that the areas are still protected in order for us to continue to view using both the optical telescope and the radio telescope. And the colleagues from DMR accept that this is possible.
Can I just add some few points on that? Well, there is a scientific theory that says if the fracking is done more than 30 kilometers away from any sensitive area, it does not affect that area. That was one temporary from the University of Stellenbosch by the expert on it. On this matter. But I also have had an opportunity after my visit to Netherlands. Our ambassador introduced me to the International Liaison Officer for Shell, who is based in Cape Town. Also, he has an office here. And he subsequently came here to visit me to brief me about the problem. So why this fact is that, well, of course, actually a paper at the committee number one that I can circulate it, but they gave me a whole briefing of what is there. They have identified actually as the shale gas that they are talking about the shale gas themselves that is very much located away from the two sites, which is the Salt Telescope and the canal. And so they have even put a drawing of where this gas is going to come from. But they have also even identified the water for fracking that is even around that base. What do they call what base? The rock base, yeah, something like that. But they have said that water is enough even to be accepted for consumer use around that area. If that is the case, if there is really a shortage of water there, that water can also be made available to the community there. And they can transport water from Orange River for fracking. That's the position. And the National Development, the NPC, in fact, if you have seen the recent
release, they have said that the Department of Natural Resources must now take there is a potential for real wealth for South Africa in this. It is for the exploit. Under those auspices as described by scientific theory, plus research challenge. Just wanted to make you aware on that.
Just one remark. The research of Shell is not independent. We must always keep that in mind. It's a one-sided deal on this whole problem or project or whatever.
Of course, but the National Development Commission has had its own independent research. Actually, I even raised that question when they came to present their persons as the National Development, and they said, now Shell cannot tell them, they will do their own research. And then and the term of the exploration of Shell gets them. Will be independent of any one company, but it will be actually administered by the government through the NPC. So that's what I think we can say to that.
Okay, just a brief one, if I just may add. Is the concern of the fracking, I mean, the two areas are the light and the radio frequency. Tell me, are seismic events covered in the AGA at all? I can't recall.
Yeah.
They are.
Yeah. I was one of the people who passed that bill, so I know it very well. It's the outcome.
I don't remember that. Maybe the chair remembers. But I would have thought that maybe the geological side of things should do that. But I don't remember. And then lastly, on Honourable Line, the stakeholders forum, I'll ask about to respond to that. So maybe with your permission, Chair, may I ask starting with the Professor after I allow the DG to fill in the gaps.
Thank you, DG. Honourable Duntua, just very quickly, I've already issued a request for the list of 85 organisations to be sent through to Ms. Isaac, so you should get that soon. I can tell you now, it's a collection of a wide range of NGOs, schools, science centres in all of the nine provinces, universities, and a few companies. So a very wide range of stakeholders that have been supported there to host the NSW National Science Week activities. So you'll get the list in the next few days. Honourable Smith, if I could just add one additional point to the DG's comprehensive response on the gaps in the national system of innovation. There's one overarching constraint, which is that of the question of scale.
Thanks.
South Africa's science system, we have the evidence, is fairly efficient for its size. We produce, for the size of our science system, we produce significant numbers of outputs. Maybe on the side of patenting, we're still a little low, but many of the other areas, indicators for scientific productivity of our research activities in South Africa, are very high. So we are, comparatively speaking, already very efficient. So the issues that the DG pointed to will make an improvement, but the fundamental constraint is a question of scale, that's a longer term issue. On the specific question now of the aging cohort, you may recall, I think Honourable Smith, you were there when we presented to you on our human capital development strategy a few weeks ago, about 2 or 3 months ago. I can't remember, sir, if you were there, but we did make a presentation here, and in that presentation, we highlighted a number of interventions that are currently being captured in the human capital development strategy that the DG was talking to earlier on, and also indicated to you the range of programs that are already in place, as well as the funding priorities and the allocation of funds for these specific interventions that are being captured in the human capital development strategy. And I don't have the figures in my head right now, but we are investing very, very significantly in what we call the next generation researchers, which is the postgrad students, as well as the emerging researchers, which is the ones who the young researchers that have recently obtained PhDs and that are on their way to becoming established researchers and academics in our research institution. A significant portion, the majority of it in fact, is being invested there in this period of the NTEF right now. The DG has mentioned several of the programs already that we have established there. We are also in consultation with the Department of Higher Education and Training on how to deal with this problem of the aging cohort. But certainly it would be inappropriate for us as a department to intervene in what is a managerial and institutional governance question around retirement ages. My own understanding is that in many universities, the 60 is moving back up to 65. And I know in many of the universities, retired professors are effectively full-time employees again, but just on shorter-term contracts, not on the permanent staff. So I think my reading of the situation is we're moving very much in the direction of the U.S., where basically, and some of the European countries, where established academics stay on way beyond their retirement age, but on different terms of employment. And certainly we don't exclude them from research funding opportunities. We don't have a cut-off date where researchers are not eligible for research funds any longer. Certainly that's not the case. On the IK legislation, the text, the narrative, Honourable Smith, that you pointed to here, where it says, has been affected by the lack of finality of the DTI amendment bill process. In fact, what's being referred to is that the consultation between the department and the DTI on this matter is ongoing. So the lack of finality part. In fact, they're meeting right now. I checked with my chief director on this. There's a consultation going on right now between the DST and the DTI on this particular matter. There have been extensive consultations within the department between the National Intellectual Property Management Office and the IKS colleagues and our legal department, and there is now a consolidated departmental view on this, which is being discussed with the Department of Trade and Industry. So that's the latest update on that. I cannot, I'm sorry, DG, answer the question on whether the IKS patents are internationally registered. I simply don't know, but I will endeavor to find that out and make sure that you get an answer to that question.
Well, it doesn't matter, is the question, I suppose.
In the long run, it probably does. But having been an innovation research and innovation manager in the university, I would say the point at which you decide to make the investment for an international patent, you have to be fairly sure that it's worth the while and the effort to do that. I presume that these are at very early stages, so probably right now there isn't an international patent. It's probably not yet justified in terms of the cost involved.
Yeah.
But I don't know on these three that are claimed here, I don't know the specific answer. On the cash flow, just you've already seen that essentially what you've seen there is a bit of a lag of a month. In fact, I can tell you right now that in my particular program, the reason for the under expenditure in June is that the paperwork was only submitted on the 3rd and 4th of July for this. So that's why you could see that immediately the following month, the department's variation went back to 0.5%. So as you said, in our view, it's also 100% that. So that's the simple reason, and this is as a result of the sort of thing that the DG pointed to, which is that sometimes we anticipate getting reports on a particular day, and the deadline for all the paperwork is determined by that, and if that is 1 week late, then everything runs over by a few weeks. So we try what we can to make sure that we stick to those deadlines, but sometimes they're off by a few days, Honourable Members.
So then you then realize the challenges and tasks that are faced by this committee when you submit those reports.
I do, absolutely, and I will associate myself 100% with the DG's apologies to you earlier on. I do want to make the point that the HCD documents were in a week in advance, as were the IKS ones. Thank you.
Young man.
Thanks, Chair.
in terms of the 142 expanded public works program, the jobs that the, that's in place at the moment, I think there were three issues that was raised. The first one is in terms of the long-term implications and whether it's going to lead to any sort of skills development. The second issue is, you know, what type of jobs are these. And I think the third one is that the number itself is not spectacular. Just in terms of the long-term nature of these are not long-term jobs. They're unfortunately not sustainable jobs. And as per expanded public works program, they're more construction jobs, laying of roads, electrical wiring to the sites, and so on. So practically 90% of the jobs are not sustainable. So that's the unfortunate reality. In essence, I'll answer the second question as well, the construction jobs by nature. The number is not spectacular. We should note that this is not for the SKA, it's for the Mir cottage. These are 64 dishes. So once you start to expand into the SKA itself, which we were talking about 3,000 antennas, that's a different scale altogether. And it's not a linear scale necessarily. It's probably a bit more than that. Told it out in the expect in photonics, I'm not sure about that. I think BG has done a good job, but just the one thing we should recognize that Albert Einstein was not recognized for special and general relativity. He won a Nobel Prize for the photoelectric effect, which is the birth of photonics, where he proved that if you shine light on a material, a metal surface, you can emit electrons, so that if the actual photons, which is essentially what light is, actually imparts its energy to electrons and it releases the electrons. And that gives rise to things like optical fibers, and as easy to use that, you know, laser communications, and so on.
Does this also entail the SDI, the Reagan's Star Wars?
That's open to an academic debate. There was an issue around the ARVs and, you know, the assessment of the commercial risk, and I think this is the answer to that. But what you should also note about the microbicide gel, it's not just as an ARV treatment, HIV-AIDS. There was a finding related to that earlier study around the prevention of sexually transmitted diseases, which is more than 50%. I think it's 50-51% around about that. Whereas the HIV prevention was less than 50. So it's not just the HIV AIDS itself. Did you address the sub-state ARMC issues? The one thing I should point out about 120 million rand over the end test cycle, the next 3 years. So it's not just in this financial year. With regards to the fracking, DG has also answered that. What I should point out is we're busy releasing another set of regulations around protection of the Sutherland, of the South African Astronomical Observatory, the SALT site. So that's going to be released fairly soon. So as DG has indicated, the AGEA Act is an instrument that we will use to protect both from light pollution and radio pollution. Who is chairing the stakeholders forum for the SKA? The local, one of the chief directors in the department is chairing, Dr. Seppo Tsiko. Seppo Tsiko. He normally chairs the stakeholders forum, and we'd be glad to accept any, as you indicated, issues that you've raised from the local community, and just to get a sense of what that is and whether we are actually dealing with it. DJ actually referred to me with a question around the technology station and what we're doing. I think Godfrey, because it's a Program 5 initiative, so I'll leave it to Godfrey to do that. I think I've answered the question.
Okay, just before we move on to another speaker, I thought you need to question about the job. Maybe you can be a little bit more generous in your answer.
Yes.
And to say that it's going to be upscaled from 140-something to a larger number doesn't give us any sense of what the potential is.
Yes.
Do you have any departmental figures that indicate what the
over the lifetime of the project, the implementation to 2025, whatever it is, what kind of job creation are you looking at? For?
My sense is that we haven't done that yet. We would rather come back to the portfolio committee. Not only the total number, but when will this job be? Because the construction is likely to really start beyond 2016. So we also need to be honest as to when these things will start. But there was another question, sorry, Chair, that I thought I had, that says what other jobs within the SKA, not necessarily the construction jobs. So maybe Mal can think about that and come back. In the meantime, you know, people who are going to be real astronomers and where we are in terms of the human capital program, people who are involved in the technician program for the retrofitting of the AVM, everybody can talk to them. But maybe that's just to
before that, as much as there is I'm also understanding that if even people are taught at doing energy work, they are to be taught. That's what I'm not comfortable with the response that saying even if they are going to do the task, they are to be taught on how. So therefore for me that's what I would say. And then now you have brought me with the second question that says that now in those construction is it are you able to, will you then be able to monitor if those workers are then being developed, no matter how the skills are, if they are semi-skilled? So that for me, the question was more on that.
Thanks very much, DG and honorable members. The issue of 800 foreign participants in terms of knowledge and STI networks and the risk thereof. One of the areas that we've identified as a challenge and a risk for our work is the current unstable economic climate globally. What we have done in order to mitigate those risks is to look at our portfolio of partnerships and see how those can actually balance out the expected negative impact. And one of the things that the honorable members may have picked up on the recent visit, especially the time spent at the European Union, is that we have managed to negotiate a very special partnership with the EU. One that even within the EU itself is recognized as the best partnership in terms of our participation in their programs. We are about the fourth biggest participant. That is in terms of the statistics, but in terms of per capita, we actually are the best because we are compared to the US, we compare with India, we compare to China and Russia. So what that does is we have been able to build that partnership to now serve as the facilitator of the trilateral between South Africa, Africa and the EU. And we hope that that will enable us to sort of mitigate the risks that we're currently facing. A number of areas that we're using to build that, for example, is using radio astronomy as an area of partnership. We're now in the process of negotiating funding modalities to support radio astronomy between Africa and the EU, and then that is progressing quite well. The other area that we're looking at is the area of building skills and capacity in the area of clinical trials with the program called the European Union Development Countries Clinical Trials Partnership, EDCTP. And again, this is one area that is going to help us sort of build look towards even meeting our targets that we have set ourselves. So there are these challenges. We're looking at it as a risk, but there is actually a plan. The DG has mentioned that one of the things that we are doing, working towards the Horizon 2020, which is the EU program of funding that will be running from 2014 to 2020, is to make sure that not only are we able to get more funding, in fact, one of the things that he didn't mention is that the BRICS countries will no longer be receiving any funding from that program. However, because of our good relations with the EU, we are still going to continue to access the funding 2014 until 2020. So that just really shows that we have put some mitigation plan in place, at least to make sure that we are able to continue to build capacity in the country and in the continent. But again, to make sure that these networks, which are actually the lifeblood of science and technology globally, are actually kept alive. Thanks, Stephen.
No, I think DG, you have explained it very well.
Just on this EU funding, BRIC and BRIC, BRICS versus BRIC, when we were there, I think we got the impression, and forgive me if I got it wrong, was that matter had not yet been finalised, and they were still discussing the exclusion of BRICS with the S on the end, that you're saying now it's been finalised because it's BRIC without us.
The S is definitely going to be benefiting. That I can say for sure.
Okay. So it's a recent decision, then.
Yeah.
Good.
Thanks, Chair. All I can I think that the last point you talk about South Africa, partnership with
the
water service and medical something.
The clinical trials?
Yeah. Is that the one, isn't that it's going to be launched somewhere in November here?
We're going to have a big event in November.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This committee must be invited.
The committee is definitely going to receive it.
We have to be there. Thank you very much. Just
a comment on the jobs, the issues of the jobs.
Thanks, Ted. The follow-on question around the 142 jobs and whether we are monitoring in terms of ensuring the skills development. As I indicated, these are public works jobs and the construction jobs. Now, what I should point out is that we are heading to the timeline of 2016 where we have full complement of dishes in place. So we're starting off with the public works in terms of ensuring that the base infrastructure is in place. But as the tenders are put in place, we're going to be moving towards operationalization of those tenders. And for that purpose, we have a partnership with Durban University of Technology in terms of developing technicians that's going to be working on the antenna. And that is what we are monitoring. But the public works, the aspect, is going to be not.
Thanks,
any further input? I see the university officer wants to say something. Oh, you are engaging. I thought you were wanting to say something. Okay, and I will do it.
July.
This was just to indicate that for the month of July we have been able to reduce the deviation, but also we have revised the expenditure plan.
The last one, from now I see that I'm comfortable with that because I was a bit concerned. I hear what the teacher was saying in terms of the right exit to the management. I'm happy about that. You raised something very important on the issue, your project, the coding housing project. But you had a very problematic statement in my view, that in something that is beyond your control, the cooperation or whatever this is, which is beyond your control from the Department of Manufacturing. What is it that you have to do? If you say beyond your control, have you given up or whatever? I'm raising this check because remember that as science and technology we are giving support, and therefore when there are issues of this nature from other departments, it is in our interest to have an understanding why a particular department is not cooperating, which then gives you the current statement. If that can be clarified for me, I'll be
okay. She's going to ask one more as well. One more question for me. You know, a couple of years ago when we did a performance review with yourselves, we had the issue of targets not being met, partly, in our view, because they were too high. So our recommendation was to you was to rather than have targets which you failed to meet to make you look silly, rather set realistic targets which you meet. Now, my question is, of course, it also works the other way around. If you meet all your targets, it might suggest that they're too low, too easy to meet, and therefore you're being given a pat on the back for actual average performance instead of excellent performance. How do you manage that? I mean, what is your approach to the issue of setting a target?
Thanks, Chair. Let me start with Honorable Tunjo. The Department of Science and Technology is always looking for innovative solutions to problems. And this Plainmont Housing Project is one initiative where together with the CSIR, in fact, I'm not so sure whether the full story has been told. They look at developing bricks differently, the cement and the CO2 footprint as a result of their cement production, the design of the house in such a way that should the family later wish to expand the house, it's easy without having to break walls. So we now have this as a pilot in this place called Plainmont. I don't know quite how many houses we've been built as a pilot. So what we are saying that from our point of view, if this is working reasonably well in Claymore, the country should be able to adopt that model for the RDP housing to the rest of the country. Now, we are not having a mandate to build housing in the rest of the country. And there is no mechanism of forcing people to take the pilot that we are demonstrating. We may think it's a great idea, but it's only when other government departments work with us and say maybe all building regulations for building RDP houses must adopt this model. That's what I mean, that we are trying to think creatively around how do you influence the uptake differently so that, you know, you don't say it's beyond our control. So we are investigating with the Department of Human Settlement and other agencies that are responsible for the building regulation to have this specification that will ensure that even if a house is built by a company X located, the same building regulations are being proposed. That's what we're thinking. But so it's two challenges which we are thinking about and actually. On the target, we try and map our target on the trajectory of what we are trying to do overall, as you said earlier on. What are the gaps that we've identified in building the NSI that would eventually help us to do the things we do? So we start there rather than, you know, where are we? And of course, we've learned now that the formulation of these targets informed by where we would like to do. In this case, of course, the other guiding principle is that we have a five-year strategy plan. So we should come back to you after 5 years and say, this is what we're going to say in 5 years. So if we set low targets that look good on a quarterly or on an annual, you will eventually hold us to ransom in year three or year four when you say, look, you tell us these things are good, but in relation to what we want to build as an NSI in terms of making impact in people's life, you do nothing. So we hope that even when you hold us accountable, you'll be able to start the balance between reports that might look good there, but also whether these reports are making impact in people's lives.
also learned that we can't be too ambitious because we also have to take into account the realism of how long sometimes it takes to be realized. Thanks.
Thank you very much. I think so far, we have had a very constructive interaction. Your goal is also to establish the committee on where we are and where we're going. And I hope that also many of the questions of the committee and concerns have been clarified and been responded to. As usual, we are also very proud to have a department that is very responsive and very active.